Funding for the connection is made possible by the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection.
The night is young, the skies are clear, and if you want to go walking, dear, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. Understand the reason why you're sentimental, 'cause so am I. It's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. You can tell at a glance what a swell night this is for romance. You can hear dear Mother Nature murmuring low, let yourself go. Sweet, my chickadee, and when I kiss you, just say to me, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's deductible, it's delirious, it's dilemma, it's delimit, it's deluxe, it's delovely.
Funny how much we remember about God is from hymns, how much we know about love and life, about the blues and getting over them, even about baseball and the grand old flag, come straight out of song lyrics. Everything we didn't learn in kindergarten, we learned from the likes of Cole Porter, who wrote De Lovely for Sarah Vaughan to sing, the likes of Irving Berlin, Lawrence Hart, Ira Gershwin, Johnny Mercer, dozens of other lyricists, some of them household names, others known only to Tin Pan Alley. In many ways, they are our Homer and Shakespeare. We're reading and remembering favorite song lyrics this hour from Broadway, Hollywood, vaudeville, cabaret, or pop. Connection listeners, think of the lyrics that move you. Can you credit the authors? There's a Connection t-shirt for the caller who can remember, for example, who wrote the words of Love is Just Around the Corner and the bridge lyrics that go, Venus de Milo was noted for her charms, but strictly between us, you're cuter than Venus, and what's more, you've got arms. 1-800-423-8255 makes the song lyrics connection. Recite your favorites at 1-800-423-TALK or join us online at theconnection.org. Our guests are Robert Gottlieb and Robert Kimball, co-editors of the anthology Reading Lyrics. They picked more than 1,000 of their favorites from 1900 to 1975. Robert Gottlieb was the editor of the New Yorker magazine. He also edited Reading Jazz, the collected stories of Rudyard Kipling, and the journals of John Cheever. Robert Kimball is the co-editor of the lyrics book. He's also edited the complete lyrics of Cole Porter and of Ira Gershwin and of Irving Berlin. Welcome, gentlemen. Start with your faves, the ones that set the standard. Bob Kimball.
Well, there's so many faves, but It's the Lovely is certainly one of them, which we've just heard, even though I didn't recognize It's Deductible as part of the original lyric. But that's a wonderful lyric that Cole Porter from Red Hot and Blue 1936 and introduced by the great Ethel Merman.
And Robert Gottlieb.
Yeah, that's a song that goes on and on. There are five wonderful refrains that get more and more demented as they proceed, the last of which, actually, Bob Kimball discovered it was unknown. And that's in the book.
Yeah, just digress for a moment on the matter of extensions. You're the Top goes on forever. I was fascinated in your book to see that The Lady is a Tramp goes on and on, as I've never heard it sung. There's a famous dirty version of You're the Top, in which, as I recall,
King Kong's penis?
Something
revived. Venus,
yeah, exactly.
Self-abuse.
Yes.
Yes, you know that Irving Berlin wrote that.
Oh, did he really?
As a present to Moss Hart and Cole Porter as they sailed away on their world cruise, he thought they should have something to amuse themselves with. But for many, many years, Mr. Berlin would not allow anyone to let the world know that he'd written it. So he sort of gave the impression that Porter had written it himself.
Well, it took a master to improve a masterpiece.
Well, it's the one lyric that it will appear in two different books, the complete lyrics of Cole Porter and the complete lyrics of Irving Berlin. So my editor who's here, I hope, will allow that to stand.
See, these songs have all these verses. First of all, because these songs tend to be specialty songs that were given to a star in a Broadway show. And they would sing it, it would be a hit, there'd be a lot of applause, and they'd come back and do an encore, and then another one, and another one. So there always had to be more material. Then a song like You're the Top, which was such a smash, lent itself to parody and extension. And people like Noel Coward would write versions. Everybody who did it at a different point in time would improve on it or extend it or decorate it. And so they grew and grew like Topsy.
Let's Do It is Cole Porter. That went on forever, too.
And that has a memorable parody version by Noel Coward. Which is superb, and it's in our book as well as the original Cole Porter version.
Which one? I'm looking at, lyrics I never heard. Young Whelks and Winkles in Pubs Do It. Little Sponges in Their Tubs Do It. Let's Do It. Let's Fall in Love. What did Noel Coward do with it?
Well, he had Somerset and All the Moms and various other people who were well known to the fashion and cabaret world of the 1950s when he wrote that parody version. They did that for each other all through the years. They each parodied each other's songs.
The Dragonflies and the Reeds Do It. Sentimental Centipedes Do It. Let's Fall in Love.
Coward writes, the Brontes felt that they must do it. Ernest Hemingway could just do it. H. Beecher Stowe did it, but she had to rehearse. Tennessee Williams self-taught does it. Kinsey with a deafening report does it. I mean, these guys were geniuses, what can you say?
You don't have in here the Cole Porter can-can lyric, but that certainly outdoes itself.
It's another example of Porter's extended list songs. He had so many that we had to choose just a few to balance it out with the many great love ballads that he wrote. And people forget how many love ballads he wrote because he's so well remembered for his list songs.
I've heard Bobby Short do the can-can song, but he can't do it without, even at the piano, having the list in his hand. Do you remember any of it off the top of your well-furnished head?
Well, sure. You don't want to hear me do a lot of it, but if Ravel, Debussy and Ravel can, if a slow-mo Hamadan can, there's so many versions of it, and that it just if the Waltz King Johann Strauss can, if the girls in Die Fledermaus can, he plays on it so brilliantly that it's partly his great research to begin with, and also his enormous skill and experience as a writer to bring them all together and make it all work so well.
Bob Gottlieb, have we got your nominees for sort of the gold standard of song lyric writing?
Well, we don't, because I'd feel unfaithful to all the others. It turns out, and no surprise, that among the writers, the ones we think of as the greatest are the greatest. Not just that their skill was greater, their talent was greater, but because they wrote more that really seemed to us to qualify as great. So that Berlin and Porter and Hart and Gershwin and
Hammerstein,
of course, and then a few others, Johnny Mercer, really do seem like the top of the heap. But that doesn't mean that individual songs by other less prolific writers aren't on the level of those. It's just that they wrote more of the ones that are basic to us.
You have a special coda and category for sort of individual achievements.
Cite
a few of those.
Well, what happened was that as we were preparing the book, we really didn't know what we were doing, as you never do when you begin an anthology. And it turned out that what we wanted to do primarily was to present lyricists. So we chose those people who had at least three songs we felt were on the highest level. But of course, that left out a bunch of songs that we also liked. So we cheated, the way you always do, because it's your anthology, so why not? You're making the rules. And we put in a bunch of songs that we didn't want to leave out, but there was only one from a lyricist, like How High the Moon, or Billie Holiday's famous two songs of hers, Strange Fruit by Lewis Allen and God Bless the Child, that she wrote with Arthur Herzog Jr., or earlier songs like By the Light of the Silvery Moon, which my mother used to sing, so it is special to me. Put Your Arms Around Me, Honey. My St. Louis Blues, you know, Handy's, it's his best lyric, and that was the one we thought we should use. So we had it both ways.
I judge them, it's funny, by songs my father loved. Who Stole My Heart Away, or Why Haven't I Told You? I must say the Jerome Kern thread goes through a lot of great lyrics, including not only Oscar Hammerstein, but
P.G. Woodhouse.
The great P.G. Woodhouse wrote Bill for Showboat. 1-800-423-8255 makes the great song lyrics connection. Mark is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Mark. Welcome.
I'm calling to answer the question. Your question was, who wrote Love is Just Around the Corner? And the answer
is?
Leo Robin.
You got it. Bingo. You get the T-shirt or the mug or whatever you like. How did you know?
I happen to have reading lyrics right in front of me.
Oh, that's cheating.
Cheat.
We want to recount.
A lot of good that'll do us.
Well, it just speaks for the quality of the book.
Well, Leo Robin, turns out, and I didn't know this, wrote a lot of famous songs and great songs. Diamonds Are a Girl Best Friend, In Love in Vain, a Jerome Kern tune. He also wrote a song that should have been sung in the Clinton era and wasn't, The Little Girl from Little Rock. Why didn't that surface long ago, Bob Kimball?
Oh, I wonder, too.
Leo Robin's a perfect example of a first-rate lyricist and a very important lyricist whose name really doesn't mean anything to the general public. But he wrote 10, 15, 20 songs that everybody more or less knows. And we're trying to rescue and reconstitute those reputations as well as give the songs to give the lyrics to people.
We'll come back on the matter of Leo Robin and maybe talk about The Little Girl from Little Rock. We're going into the break with But Beautiful, which is a Johnny Burke lyric sung here by Billie Holiday.
Love is tearful, heartscape. It's a problem, or it's play. It's a heartache anyway. But beautiful, and I'm thinking if you were mine, I'd never let you go, and that would be but beautiful.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and in... I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Song Lyrics Connection.
Ba-ba-biddy-biddy-biddy-dee. Cause my hair is curly. Just because my teeth are pearly. Just because I always wear a smile. Like to dress up in the latest style. Cause I'm glad I'm living. I take these troubles all with a smile. Just because my color's shady, that's the difference, maybe, why they call me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
don't you shine? Start with your shoesies. Shine each place up. Make it look like new. Shine your face up. I want to see you wear a smile or two. Why don't you shine?
That's Bing Crosby. The song is called That's Why They Call Me Shine, written by Cecil Mack, who was one of the top black songwriters of the period. Put all that in context. Robert Gottlieb or Robert Kimball?
Well, Richard C. McPherson, also known as Cecil Mack and best known for Charleston, wrote that song, and it had great popularity when Bing Crosby sang it. And it's one of those songs which is certainly politically incorrect in almost every way you can imagine, but that has an infectious quality that has captivated people over many years. And it's an important and interesting song.
Speak about political incorrectness in songs in general.
Well, there was a great deal of it at the beginning of the century. And there was, because of vaudeville, and the people were writing songs for new immigrant peoples who enjoyed hearing themselves written about, parodied, made fun of. So there were Jewish songs and Irish songs and Italian songs, which I'm afraid would have been referred to as WAP songs, and Mick songs and Kraut songs, etc. And at the time, nobody thought they were anything but funny, as far as we know. Now, of course, they're horrifying, and fortunately, very few of them have any merit whatsoever, so there was no reason to consider reprinting them.
But what about a song that's still venerated away, in a way, Ain't Nobody's Business If I Do, which is, would be considered an enabling of abuse song now. Do you know what you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I can only say, I guess I'm not politically correct. It never occurred to me that it was that. I mean, this expresses something that a lot of people felt, you know.
Bob Kimball?
There are many torch songs in which women tell us that they're suffering, but they like it, and they wouldn't have it any other way. That's a part of the human condition, and songs said it. We may not like to hear it.
Ubi Blake used to say the politically incorrect songs, which a lot of white liberals objected to strenuously, were still worth hearing. They're part of their history. I remember the great John Hammond, the record producer, trying to prevent Cecil and Blake from singing, "If You've Never Been Vamped by a Brown Skin, You've Never Been Vamped at All." But they went ahead and did it anyway and said, look, this was a song that we wrote for Shuffle Along. It was very popular at the time, and it's something we're not going to try to pretend didn't happen. We did it. And it was funny to audiences to have jokes about the different shades of color of black people, the sealskin browns, etc. It was very, very amusing in its time. We wouldn't do it today.
Talk about amusing. Let's listen to Frank Lesser, Vivian Blaine singing from Guys and Dolls, Take Back Your Mink.
The following fall, then the necklace, the bag, the hat, and the shoes. That was late 48, I recall. Then last night, in his apartment, he tried to remove them all. And I said, as I ran down the hall, what made you think that I was one of those girls? Take back the gown, the shoes, and the hat. I may be down, but I'm not flat as all that. I thought that each expensive gift you'd arrange was a token of your esteem. Now when I think of what you want in exchange, it all seems a horrible dream. So take back your mink to Frank.
Robert Kimball and Robert Gottlieb. Let's hear it for Frank Lesser, who did it all.
And whose collected lyrics we're going to be publishing in a year or two. Complete lyrics.
Do you have I Got the Horse Right Here
Duke
in the book?
For Ten Horns. It's in the book.
The title again?
It's called Fugue for Tin Horns. The first line of which is, I got the horse right here.
His name is Paul Revere.
Once it gets started, you don't really hear all the rest of the words because they're running in counterpoint, but it's one of the great songs. We had a real question about including it, but we felt it's so important in the song, one of Lesser's great songs, it should be in the book.
Give us the short form on Frank Lesser.
Well, it's a career that started in Hollywood. In collaboration. It's a very rare career in that sense. He started writing with other people and slowly started writing by himself during the war and then transferred from Hollywood to Broadway, where he composed and wrote his own shows. He no longer had a collaborator. In a way, it's opposite to a lot of people who earlier in musical history started on Broadway and when sound came into movies, went to Hollywood.
It's also interesting to note that he was well-trained as a musician before he became a lyricist, but he had such a great gift for the vernacular and for current phrases, as certainly Take Back Your Mink. It's just so contemporary for 1950, and he captures the tone of the city dwellers, and that's something that hadn't been present in a lot of the musical theater before, so he was quite remarkably gifted.
He sure was. Adelaide's Lament in Guys and Dolls, a poison can develop a cold and variations. And furthermore, just from stalling and stalling and stalling the wedding trip, a person can develop la grippe when they get on the train for Niagara and she can hear church bells chime, the compartment is air-conditioned and the mood sublime. Then they got off at Saratoga for the 14th time. A poison can develop la grippe.
He just keeps going, and you think that's great. A great lyricist could have stopped there, but he goes on. The post-nasal drip, with the wheezes and the sneezes and the sinus that's really a pip. And then with a tremendous ending, from a lack of community property and a feeling she's getting too old, a person can develop a bad, bad cold. It's so great.
1-800-423-8255. Edwin is on the line.
Yes, I'm calling about the syrupy ballads of popular music of World War II, early Frank Sinatra with Tommy Dorsey, This Love of Mine, or Glenn Miller and Ray Eberle, or This Is No Laughing Matter, Charlie Spivak. I wonder if there is a place in the book for some comment about these, and I'll take my comment off the air.
Edwin, thank you. What about There Are Such Things?
Well, the point... A lot of those songs, I don't know whether Edwin was here during World War II. I was. Kimball was. I certainly remember how effective those songs were as they came over the radio, which is how we heard songs in those days. Most of those lyrics are not very distinguished, but the mood they created was very important for the war and for people on the home front, as we called it, and also, I think, for soldiers overseas. There are many compilations out now in record stores of songs that got us through World War II, is basically what they're called. As in any genre, most of the examples aren't very good. A few are. But they were very worthy. They had a place, they had a role. And if they're not sublimely great, and most of them aren't, which is why we left them out of the book, there's nothing to be ashamed of in them.
Speak of some of those, those Sinatra Dorsey tunes, the World War II tunes. I mean, I immediately think of A Heart That's True, There Are Such Things, and stuff like that. How do you judge sublimity and perfection in a song lyric?
Well, it's a very personal matter. What really works for you and you keep coming back to, both when you hear it and when you read it, which are two very different things. And also what has stood the test of time. What are songs that people today can sing and do sing? That was one of our major tests for inclusion in this book. Almost every song in this book, not all, but almost every one, can be and somewhere is being sung by today's cabaret artists.
Let's listen to one of the incontestably great ones from Rodgers and Hammerstein and Oklahoma, sung by Alfred Drake. Oh, What a Beautiful Morning.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky.
This was Oscar Hammerstein in a sort of comeback mode for himself. He was also succeeding Lawrence Hart as Richard Rodgers, great writer. Tell the Oscar Hammerstein story, Bob Kimball.
Well, the Oscar Hammerstein story is the story of a man who was brought up in a great theatrical family, who was exposed to every aspect of the theater as a young man, who worked as a really was tutored by Otto Harbach, and then began writing with any number of composers, including Vincent Humans and Rudolf Frimmel and Sigmund Romberg, and then formed a wonderful collaboration with Jerome Kern, and they produced Showboat. And in many ways, Oklahoma is a continuation of the tradition of mining the American myth that was set up beautifully in Showboat. And it also is a turning away from the Ruritania of the operetta world, where most operettas were set in foreign locales, exotic locales, with you know, beer being consumed and Monty's running around on their horses. This was America, or at least a view of America, which many people wanted to believe during World War II. And this show came along, and it was an extraordinarily important show. We cannot underestimate the importance of Oklahoma. It changed the world. I'm sure Bob Gottlieb has thoughts about that.
Yeah, and this song also has a very important place in that, because famously, and unlike, as far as I know, what happens in any other musical before that, the curtain went up in Oklahoma, and I remember it well. There was a bare stage, and instead of 96 chorus boys coming on and being cute, a cowboy wandered on and alone sang this song. It was the first song in Oklahoma. It was the first song that ever opened a show this way. It was the first song that Richard Rodgers had produced without Lawrence Hart, moving from the wit and sophistication of the Hart period into this wartime American love of America. So it signaled a lot of change.
1-800-423-8255. We're talking about great song lyrics with the collectors of reading lyrics, Robert Gottlieb and Robert Kimball. Jody is calling from New York City. Hello, Jody.
Hello. Hi, pleased to be on the air. And actually, I write about popular music for a living. I actually know Robert Kimball.
Are you Jody Rosen?
I sure am. How are
you? Hi, Jody. It's good to hear your voice.
Well, nice to talk to you. Great to hear you on the radio. Anyway, I want to offer a kind of younger generation's perspective on this topic. I happen to love the great music and song lyrics of the so-called golden age of popular song. I was introduced by my grandmother at a very young age to the music of Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald and Bing Crosby, et cetera. And those song standards have become a great part of my life and have really enriched my life. But I, of course, grew up in the rock era, or more specifically in the hip-hop era. And I'd just like to make a comment about one of the problems that I think that continues to sort of dog critical discourse on pop music and, more broadly, the historiography of American popular music. What's interesting to me and what troubles me a bit is the kind of tacit suggestion, and I'm not accusing Mr. Kimball or Mr. Gottlieb of this by any means, but there's this kind of notion that, truly great, witty, literate lyric writing ended with the advent of rock and roll. And I think this sort of myopia is a little unfortunate, particularly because I think we're living in a kind of second golden age of great lyric writing, and those lyrics are found in today's rap music.
Jody, I wouldn't dispute what you're saying at all,
yeah.
But we were trying to write about a body of work that was centered in Broadway, Hollywood, and another Tin Pan Alley, a pre-Beatles Elvis world. And the world you're describing is a different world, and we're much too close to it, in my judgment, to have perspective on it and to be able to make a judgment as to which of these songs are standards and which have endured.
Jody,
so
the test is too early to do that. Jody, give us your own nominations of rap songs that 50 years from now will be clutching to our hearts in a hardcover book.
You know, I don't know that I can make that suggestion now, and I certainly, I mean, believe me, I think there's something very special about this music, and I completely understand what reading lyrics is doing, and embrace that. What I'm wanting to say is, you know, I, talking to people who sort of grew up with this music, grew up with the song standards, or who, you know, love it, I'm thinking of my own grandparents. They tend to say, oh, gosh, nobody writes a good lyric anymore. And I think it's unfortunate because I find, you know,
great. I want your nominations, Jody.
Great. My nominations for individual songs?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I can't imagine that anyone would. I mean, listen to several of the songs, believe it or not, on the new Eminem album. I'd suggest the work of the Notorious B.I.G., some songs by Public Enemy. You know, the thing about this music is that there's great, there's wit, and it's very literate, and there's kind of, you know, wild punning and poetic pyrotechnics and all the things that we find in, you know, a great Cole Porter song or in Berlin or Lauren's Heart.
All right, listen, I'm going to take your word for it, but here's the kind of standard that stuff is going to have to meet. Here's Frank Sinatra singing Lawrence Hart's lyric, a Richard Rodgers tune. The song is It Never Entered My Mind.
Myself, once you warned me that if you scorned me, I'd say a lonely prayer again and wish that you were there. Get into my head again. It never entered my
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Song Lyrics Connection.
Peel me a grape. Crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me and dine me. Don't try to fool me, be you me, either amuse me or lose me. I'm getting hungry. Peel me a grape.
This is a Dave Frischberg lyric of the Modern School, sung by Diana Krall. Should we listen to another verse?
Yeah.
Pop me a cork. French me a fry. Crack me a nut. Bring a bowl full of bonbons. Chill me some wine. Keep standing by, just entertain me. Champagne me, show me you love me. Kid, love me, best way to cheer me. Cashmere me, I'm getting hungry.
This is the work of the very contemporary Dave Frischberg, born in 1933, author of I'm Hip, and the fabulous Van Lingo Mungo lyric made up entirely of the names of baseball players. Where do you put Dave Frischberg in the galaxy here?
I place him very high. He's an extraordinary writer who combines a jazz feel with a Cole Porter-ish sensibility about lyric writing and his ability to bring together wonderful phrases and juxtapose them. I mean, the Van Lingo Mungo song is a great example of just taking something very simple and evocative and nostalgic for everyone. But this song is wonderful and has a jazz quality that I like very much.
And everybody sings it. That to go back to our rap friend, the distinction between the work he's talking about, which I sort of can enjoy, and songs like this, or It Never Entered My Mind, is that the rap songs are performances by one guy. It's impossible to believe that through the years and decades, other artists are going to attempt to interpret them. They're one-offs. They're performances rather than songs. These, we hope, are songs that everybody has sung, everybody does sing, and everybody will sing. Mm-hmm. That's what makes the songs standards rather than the performances of good lyrics brilliant.
1-800-423-8255, Connection listeners. Your favorite song lyrics and why? 1-800-423-8255. And who wrote them? Peggy is on the line.
Hi.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Chris. Great show. Thank you very much. This is a little bit of a departure from what you're talking about, but I happen to love Come Sunday by Duke Ellington. And I've had it a lot on my mind this week because I love all of Ellington, and I've really enjoyed the Ken Burns jazz thing, but I was just absolutely astonished and horrified when I heard Wynton Marsalis say that Ellington had never done anything spiritual, talking to a bunch
of... Oh, he couldn't have said that.
He did, talking to a bunch of high school students. He said he's the guy that writes about what happens at night between two people, and that's what he was all about, and I was really saddened by that, because I think...
There was a slip of the tongue or something, because he surely knows the sacred work, and he...
I would think he would, and I have thought that the Black-Brown-Beige Suite symphony was just so incredible.
From which came Come Sunday?
Beg your pardon?
I say, and Come Sunday came out of that.
That's right.
Peggy, I can't think of the lyrics offhand, and the next question would be, who wrote them? And I don't know. Do you?
Well, what it says in the program notes, in the record notes that I have, is that when Black, Brown, and Beige was sort of didn't go over, that the brighter side is that Duke became quite imaginative in reprising the musical themes, and he quickly moved to past the suite of themes, approach, and in time-honored method recycled his music in new works. And as I read it, he himself wrote the lyrics. That's unusual, I know, but that's the way I read it. And it also says that Mahalia Jackson was so impressed with him that he's the only person that she, the only jazz musician that she ever really wanted to perform with. And she is on the...
I remember now, it is a prayer for my people.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. And I've heard it any number of times in our church, and I think it's just one of those things that sends chills up and down my spine every time I hear it. So
Peggy,
thank you very much for listening to me on this.
It's a great pleasure, Peggy. Thank you for reminding us of Duke Ellington's Come Sunday. 1-800-423-8255 makes the song lyrics connection. Matt is on the line.
Hello.
Hey, Matt. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be on the show. It's a great topic. My recommendation would be All the Things You Are. I just...
Amen.
I feel that it's a...
That's Kern, but who wrote the music? Hammerstein?
I'm not sure.
It's Kern and Hammerstein from Very, Very Warm for May, of 1939 show, and it's often cited by songwriters as the greatest song written in America.
That would be my feeling. That would be my feeling. I just it always touches me, and there are so many beautiful versions of it, instrumental, vocal, and so the melody on its own also is a very powerful lyric, if you will.
Matt, I'm just looking it up here. Bob Kimball, why make the case that it's the greatest of all time. You are the promised kiss of springtime that makes the lonely winter seem long. You are the breathless hush of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song. All these famous words. You are the angel glow that lights a star. The dearest things I know are what you are.
And that leads to a question, Chris, which, how important would the writers think metaphor, alliteration, and those other literary devices are to brilliant lyrics?
Well, you know, it's different in every case. Sometimes, for instance, in It Never Entered My Mind, but you played before, the internal rhymes are one of the things that make it so special. That's not what this song is like. When you're writing for Kern, you're dealing with a very long melodic line, and you have to do something very different. One of the great things about that we found studying this stuff for 3 to 4 years is how many brilliant ways lyricists found to adapt to the need of the music or the need of the place in the show or the film or simply to the need of what America needed at that time. There isn't one right way.
It reminds me of the Sammy Kahn line that when he was asked which comes first, the music or the lyric, and he said, neither one, it's the phone call. Sort of like, what do you need? We're in the studio. Sinatra's ready. That's where it starts, and it starts in a kind of panic, and every challenge is different by implication. 1-800-423-8255 makes the song lyric connection. Richard's on the line.
Thank you for taking my call, Chris. I have a nomination from the distant past, A Kiss to Build a Dream On by Louis Armstrong.
We can cue it up, Richard, through the handy-dandy Mighty Wurlitzer here. Do we need to be reminded? Here's Louis Armstrong. And
give me a kiss to build a dream on. My imagination will drive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. A kiss to build a dream on. Yes. Give me a kiss before you leave me. My imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part. A kiss to build a dream on.
Richard, I'm so glad you suggested it. Louis Armstrong could make the phone book sound like poetry. Why? What is it about that lyric?
Oh, the song is, well, romantically lyrical, poetic, words with more than one syllable. The words and rhyme schemes go well with the music. I don't know who wrote this, but he certainly had a number of songs with really great lyrics.
Brothers Kimball and Gottlieb, do you know who done it?
I don't know who done it. I know the song, and we listened to it. I have to say I disagree with Richard. I think here the charm of the performance is what carries it. The lyrics sound to me pretty simplex and not really very interesting. Would you agree, Bob?
I think so, yeah. But I also don't know who wrote it.
Richard, drop us a line. It's a wonderful song. 1-800-423-8255. Ed is on the line.
Hi.
Ed, welcome.
Hi, Chris. It's a wonderful program, and I'm very happy of this book because I teach musical film. But anyway, the song I want to recommend is Time is So Old, Love is So Brief. Love is pure gold, time is a thief. Do they know what that is?
Yeah, it's Speak Low.
Right, Speak Low, Ogden Nash
and Kurt Weill. One Touch of Venus. Right.
Mary Martin.
Yeah, and it's also one of the songs that I have at least 20 recordings of it by jazz people. It's often played by jazz people, which is very interesting, I gather.
It's known in French, as tuba, is it not?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
Chris, it's also one of the really, truly great World War II songs that was associated so much with the whole notion of parting. and the longing that people felt when they were being separated by the war.
Well, those lines, time is so old, love is so brief, love is pure gold, time is a thief, I think are just beautiful poetry.
Followed by, and I'm reading from the Kimball and Gottlieb book, we're late,
book
darling,
book.
We're late, the curtain descends, everything ends too soon.
Too soon.
Too soon.
Right. Wonderful lyrics, yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Ed, thank you. 1-800-423-TALK. Dan, you're the last caller.
Hi there.
Welcome.
I'm Daniel Gewirtz, a Boston Herald music writer.
Ah, thank you, Dan.
My favorite love song is Someone to Watch Over Me, the Gershwins. Hmm. But there's a lot of great lyrics that are about transcendence in simple circumstances. For instance, talking about Ellington, I ain't much to look at, ain't nothing to see, got a train waiting for me. Or I've got $5, I'm in good condition, but I've got a mission and that belongs to you.
Hmm.
There's a lot of, hope and transcendence in little lyrics like that. And I always appreciate them when they come along in a song. But I also have one final little question. Writing a book like this, do you think there's a lot of fine lyrics that don't really exist on the page? They really need the melody to come alive?
To a certain extent, because a lyric written with a composer is half of a work of art.
Hmm.
Unlike Lieder in the 19th century, which was basically music that was setting already famous poems by Heine or Goethe or whatever. So lyrics both can and can't stand on their own. The witty ones, the humorous ones, are easier to read because they come close to light verse and can be read as such. Some ballads, which are very simple, are harder to read, but luckily for us, most of us, we have the music in our heads.
Hmm.
So that with these famous songs, even when we're reading them on the page, we're hearing the music too, and it all comes together.
Robert Gottlieb and Robert Kimball, we should do this once a week. We're tickled to have this book in hand. Thank you. It's called Reading Lyrics. We're going out with the early work of a contemporary master, Stephen Sondheim, sung by Ethel Merman. Thank you, the Roberts. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection.
I can tell. Wait and see. There's the bell. Follow me. And nothing's gonna stop us till we're through. Honey, everything's coming up. Roses and daffodils. Everything's coming up. Sunshine.
For The Connection is made possible by the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and by the Allaire Corporation.
This is W.